Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and this is Carl from Incredibly Strange Films, Film and Stuff, and of course, Deviant Legion. And today we are very, very happy to have a very special guest with us. But before we do that, I'd like to introduce our guest panelists. Most of you that follow Deviant Legion know her as the Queen of Sci-Fi. We do a show called Intent. She's also a filmmaker that just finished principal photography on her film and based in Fresno, California. And I'd like to introduce Vicki Love. Hi, Vicki.
Hi, everyone. I'm really happy to be here. And I want to apologize to Carl's guest today because I was late. I just showed up. So apologize to everybody. And let's get on with it because this is going to be a good show.
Absolutely. And our special guest is someone who's a good friend of the podcast and someone that I really think needs a lot more recognition, and that would be Los Angeles film-based film director, independent Joe Black. Joe, welcome back to the show, man. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's great to be back, actually. I really like this show, and it means a lot that you guys have me on.
Well, thanks for that. So the reason I have you and Vicki paired up is that you both have finished principal photography to your films, and you're going into post-production, and we'll get into what that entails in that in a little bit. But first off, you just posted the trailer for your new film, which is Suffrage, which is a sequel to a previous film called Natasha Hall. And Natasha Hall is very, very much what some people call a neo-noir. I would call it a 2020 noir because, you know, each decade's a little different. But the first question I have for you in watching the trailer and also knowing the previous film, Joe, is what influences, if there were any specific influences in this particular film and the character of Natasha Hall and that, and just give us a little bit of background so our audience can sort of like do a little digging and watch films that they may not know of or that sort of thing. So why don't you give us a little bit of background?
Natasha Hall is like you said, it's kind of a noir-ish. It's more in the vein. It's a detective, female detective character that my wife and I came up with together. My wife plays Natasha in both films, and it's more akin to like a Fletch or a Columbo kind of detective series where there's like humor to it, but it gets a little dark here and there. The first one is more of like a character study about Natasha, and this one is about actually sending her on a case. You know, this is her. The first one was made during lockdown, not just COVID, but during like actual lockdown. So we were kind of stuck with one location, and we created a nice little scenario for her to have to, you know, work through some things at, you know, alone. But this one, again, we wanted to see what's Natasha like on the hunt. And so like our biggest, you know, influences, I would say, are things like the Fletch book series, the early seasons of Columbo, especially, and like a lot of like John Landis and just Michael Ritchie films in general, like early Landis. Like I almost wanted to make this like if John Landis had directed, you know, Mr. Majestic instead of Kentucky Fried Movie, you know, like an Elmore okay. Leonard, John Landis kind of hybrid movie. So, and, you know, the first one is a little quote unquote heavier. And cause it's a pretty personal struggle for her. Like she's going through some shit as a character. This one I decided to lighten it up a little bit more and have a little more fun with it, but that doesn't mean that it can't have gravity. You know what I mean? Like that it can't have weight. That it, you know, And so I also, you know, I figure by the time this one comes out, the first Natasha Hall is going to be available on demand here in like about a month through our distributor Indie Rights. And they, the second one that we just finished, Suffrage, should be available by the end of the year. And I figured, well, next year, politics is going to be on everybody's mind for the next like year and a half or so here. We got, you know, the big election coming up next year. And I remember the last couple of elections, especially out here in Los Angeles, things just get really ugly with people when it comes to mm-hmm. politics anymore. It's very volatile. So I thought it would be a good idea to make a film about politics, what the difference between politics and government, and also about, like, I don't want to say like an olive branch between sides. I kind of wanted to make a political film about why we care, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And so, you know, politics being a pretty heavy subject, I figured like that would be a nice, like, yeah, it's a really heavy subject that we're going to deal with in a really like fun way. Hopefully it pans out.
Well, you never know until you finish it and get it out there. So good luck with that. So Beck, I sent you the trailer. I don't know if you got a chance to see
it yet or not.
So you have any questions for Joe as far as the film and what it feels like and such?
Well, I really liked the trailer. It was very interesting. It caught my interest. If I was like scrolling through movies, because sometimes all I do is I scroll through whatever streaming services I have, and I just scroll through and watch trailer after trailer after trailer. And if I like a trailer, I will save the movie, and then I'll go back and see if I like the movie or not. But your trailer for your this film, the one that you just did, Suffrage, that trailer, just I would have, liked that one, save it for later. And so it was not just because I love Eric Roberts. Oh, my gosh. When he was doing really bad sci-fi TV B-movies, he helped me through a really hard time in my life, and I just love him for that. He's not afraid to take a risk. I don't know how you got him for your movie, but I love you for that. And so Carl has told me about your films, about you and your wife, your collaboration, her as an actress, and watching I put all that aside and I just watched it for what it was. Is this an entertaining film clip? And the trailer I just bought right into it. I loved it. And so it's got all that action in it. And just because we don't have a lot of action in our movie as far as physical action. But do you find that a challenge? That's what I want to ask you. Do you find the action sequences a challenge, or do you find those softer moments when you have to have two people doing their exposition? Which one do you find more challenging as a director? Not as a writer, as a director.
I mean, it's kind of all equal to me. Just the logistics of our productions are so small. Like, as far as, like, our resources, like, we made this one for about $30,000. And when your resources are so minimal, like, everything is a challenge.
Right. Oh, I know that.
Yeah. I would say.
You know, you have the cars, okay? You have cars in this. And we don't have like moving vehicles in ours. And so as I think about it as producer, writer and producer, okay, I'm not the director, my son's the director. The whole challenge of not just getting a car into it, but people jumping in and out of the car, people yelling to each other back and forth, that just seems like a huge challenge for my little production company. And I'm just wondering, did you do that in Los Angeles? Did you have to find a smaller place to go outside of Los Angeles? You know, like that. What's the deal on that?
Well, it's funny. In the first film, the first Natasha Hall was set in 1990. And so we needed, like, period-accurate cars. And we made that one
right.
for even less than we made this one for. And I put out a post on Facebook, you know, asking if anybody, you know, knew anyone with vintage with cars from before 1990 that we could have as background. And this guy who I worked with 8 years ago, who worked at a comedy club, he worked the door at a comedy club, who I haven't talked to in 8 years, he tagged a friend on that post, and that friend got in contact with me, and it turned out that friend, his name is Mike, he lived right up the street from me, like in Pasadena, and he had just a bunch of classic cars. And he literally had everything
wow.
that we needed, including the Pacer, which is featured prominently in the first film and in this one. And it was just kind of like a, you know, a miracle, like and he worked out a deal with us for a very agreeable day rate. He already had the insurance on all of the cars
nice.
We needed. And, so when it came time for this one, you know, just right back to Mike, you know, we just lucked out.
You said miracle. Can I just, for a second, when you said miracle, lots of miracles happen for us too. And so that I see that getting those cars is a miracle. Insurance are already on those cars. That's a miracle. Miracles are important. Do you have lots of those too?
Oh yeah. I mean, like the fact that this movie exists is a miracle. I'll put it that way. I worked out after the first one, we had, we brought the first one to AFM and we got some offers for distribution on the first one. And a couple of the distributors offered to distribute any future Natasha Hall ventures, you know, and because they like the character so much and they like Katniss so much. And so I kind of took that and I brought it to different investors. I took like these letters of intent and brought it to different investors looking to get double the budget we made the first one for. And doing like a split, like a five-way split between investors. And I got five right away and then started production. And when payday came around for everybody to pay up, three out of those five backed out on the day. And
yep.
I already had, you know, money invested in it. I already, you know, the ball was already rolling. You know what I mean? We already had
yep.
Eric Roberts.
Yep.
I actually spent the days we shot 4 days a week, and every other day I was hunting money the whole time, hunting locations, hunting. And
yeah.
Like, you know, if I was a smart man, I would write, you know, a script. Like I have access to a lot of cool things out here, you know, in LA. Like, but of course, for some reason, I don't write those things into the movie. You know what I mean? Like cool locations, cool, you know, whatever. I'm always like, no, I need a mansion for this scene. Like, you know, like the mansion that we had to use at the beginning, it's the opening of the movie. And as a last resort, I reached out to this house we filmed in years ago for a film I did called Tellers. And I asked them if we could shoot there. And they gave me the most incredible rate. And they told me afterward it was because of how well we treated their house last time. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
This is, and we're
yeah.
going back like 5 years, you know. So, like, the whole movie was just full of, like, little blessings like that. Little, you know, I can't believe the movie got made, to be honest. And
yeah.
we even – like hired an actress to play this one character, and she ended up loving the experience so much that she came on board and shot a couple other days with us and then became one of the investors in the movie.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, and like, so like, again, I can't believe the movie exists. And we just wrapped shooting on it. We actually haven't wrapped shooting on it, to be honest. I still have a few pickups to do. But we wrapped principal photography only a month ago, and we're about to premiere. We're premiering it a month from today.
Nice.
For my, it's for my birthday, to be honest. Like, it's going to be on my birthday.
Oh, wow. Wait. My birthday is March 30th. What's your day?
22nd. One from today.
Oh, awesome.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know,
March
we're
baby.
Yeah. Second day of spring, not first for me, but I got there close. Part of doing that is, you know, like, I can't believe this exists to begin with. So I'm just keeping with the momentum. You know, I equate making movies on this level to, like in a cartoon, when a cartoon character runs off a cliff and they keep running on the air and it's not until they like stop and look down that they fall. You know,
yeah.
So that's what I do. I just go. Don't stop. And made it. You
don't
know,
look
that,
down.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
Much to my wife and crew's chagrin.
yeah, I understand that too.
So okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No. What were you saying, Carl? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get into a little more of the influences, because we were talking before the show, and I said to you, thank God for Roman Polanski in Chinatown. And mm-hmm. tell us that story, and then we'll talk a little bit about one of my favorite films. So first talk
sure.
about all of that.
Yeah, in the opening scene of this movie, and it's not a spoiler because it's in the trailer, I guess. In the opening scene of this movie, Natasha gets her nose bitten off by a client, when I wrote the script, I sent it to everybody, and a handful of people got back to me being like, "I like the Chinatown reference with the nose, you know, Jack Nicholson gets his nose sliced off." And I have never seen Chinatown. I had not seen it.
Really?
I had started it a few times in my life, but never got more than 15 minutes into it. It just was not my thing. And the nose idea, you know, as a writer, director, I have little ideas in my pocket for years sometimes before they work their way into a movie. I've had the idea to have a detective with their nose missing in my mind since, maybe 20 years now, 15, 20 years, ever since seeing California Split with Elliot Gould,
yeah.
where he spends half the movie with his nose bandaged up after getting in the fight. And so that was, you know, and The Long Goodbye is, you know, kind of like the definitive neo-noir. I don't know, like I was just taking that element from another Elliot Gould movie and kind of applying it. I thought it'd be funny to apply it to a detective thing. I did though end up watching Chinatown after everybody kept making that comparison, because I got nervous. I was like, oh no, do I need to like not have that in the movie? Like, is that too, you know, no pun intended, on the nose? And and I watched all the way through Chinatown, and I liked it. I thought it was okay. I thought the ending was a bit of a stretch. I ended up watching The Two Jakes immediately afterward, because they were both on HBO Max. And I think I liked The Two Jakes just as much, if not a tad bit more, but only because it has Tom Waits in it. Chinatown's cool, but I feel like it's not. I felt like what we were doing was different enough with the nose, at least, from Chinatown. So I felt okay. It stayed in the movie.
So one of the things I noticed right away was the tone of the trailer. And that immediately brought me to The Long Goodbye. And in our conversations, I know that you know Ellie Gould quite well. And didn't you just go to the 50th anniversary with him and his entourage?
Yeah. It was a pretty cool event. It was hosted by Guillermo del Toro and his wife, Kim Morgan. It was at the New Beverly. And, it was a packed screening, and Elliot gave an incredible talk back afterward. If you ever get the opportunity to hear Elliot Gould do an interview of any kind, he has a really incredible way of following a stream of consciousness. You know what I mean? Like I told him it almost is as if he's not answering the question, but he's responding to the reason why you asked the question in the first place. Like almost like right. He's searching for the reason why that question is on your mind. And it makes for, mm-hmm. I go to so many of these out here, so many of these talkbacks with filmmakers and stuff like that. And it's really, not to use an overused word, but refreshing to hear somebody speaking from that perspective, as opposed to just what was your favorite part of making the movie? Oh, I love sending Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. And I think that kind of stream of consciousness is what makes The Long Goodbye what it is. You know what I mean? Because The Long Goodbye, is such a, it's much wackier than it lets on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a very funny, funny movie, but it's funny because it feels so lived in. You know what I mean? And almost, much like The Big Lebowski, which I know is like fashioned after The Long Goodbye a little bit. If people haven't seen The Long Goodbye, I mean, watch that before any Natasha Hall outings. I'll just say that for your own sake. Because that's, my librarian recommended that movie to me when I was in my teens, my late teens. He recommended that movie and Michael Ritchie's Prime Cut to me on the same day. And I brought them home from the library and I watched I watched Prime Cut first. And I was blown away. And I was I don't even want to put on this other movie. It's unfair to that movie because this was so good. How could it live up? But then I did. I put on The Long Goodbye, and 20 minutes in, I was like, how is this movie better than the last movie that I just watched? that day changed my life.
Well, I can understand. That's a double feature that would blow anyone's mind. But I do want to come back and just say this. Long Goodbye is a very important film for me. And Vicky knows this. We've known each other for a number of years. And how many times have I gone through and waxed poetic about Long Goodbye? But the reason is, when I was a kid, I had some physical difficulties, and I wasn't very mobile. And I read so much science fiction, but the other thing I read was classic Private Detective Chandler. And so I always wanted to be Marlowe, but there was no way with all the films previous where I could feel that I could be that character. And then when I saw Elliot Gould as Marlowe and what transpires in that film, I suddenly, for the first time, I saw part of myself on screen.
Wow.
And that's why that movie's so important. Marlowe as a smartass, Marlowe, tried to lie to his cat, everything about that film spoke to me at that point in time. And I was 14 years old. No, I was about 16.
Wow.
I was about 16 when I saw that in 1974. And, 50 years later, still my favorite film of all time. Never will be taken out of that realm, ever. Period.
Yeah.
So
that's incredible. Yeah, I mean that movie has an odd hypnotic power, and it's timeless in a way because they present Marlowe in that movie as a timeless character. You know what I mean?
Right.
He's not of the time. He's just kind of he's almost taking in the culture around him. He's observing it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And who can't relate to that in any era? Like just kind of drifting through a culture and trying to figure it out. That's really what the movie's about. The movie's more about, like, the cultural
yep.
climate specifically of Los Angeles at that time. You know, and that's fairly true to what, you know, Natasha Hall Suffrage is as well. Like, it's, you know, we, every detective show especially, or has like the gimmick, like, you know, Columbo's gimmick, or, you know, Columbo is a how catch 'em, not a whodunit, or things like that. Right. And I tried to think of, like, you know, well, what is Natasha's specialty? What, you know, there's things that you know, about her that I think make her a great character, but what is it about her that makes her, what's her signature as a detective, not just as a character? And my wife and I kind of, you know, knocked our heads together about it until we kind of came up with, she's more about taking care of the client than she is about solving the mystery. Like, it's more about making sure the client is okay than it is about, like, than it is important to her, like, who did it? You know what I mean?
And I
think that lends itself to this political story, because the story of this one is, it's about a famous actress, like, I think like a Julia Roberts kind of type. Her mother is murdered the day before the presidential election. And Natasha is the mother's neighbor and kind of gets, like, set up a little bit as the killer, and then gets hired by the Julia Roberts type actress to, like, figure out who did it, because she's worried that she might be next. You know, it's and Natasha going on this, you know, this hunt, if you will, starts spiraling her down this, like, rabbit hole of Hollywood and political conspiracy. And so the movie is more about Natasha keeping the movie star safe, and also just, like, starting to see the lines between politics and showmanship, if you will, and how those conflate and turn nasty. So it is more of, like, an examination, much like The Long Goodbye, you know?
You know, this mm-hmm. what you're saying about Natasha reminds me a lot of the new HBO Max Perry Mason, because in this new rendition, this reboot, or, you know, this new idea of Perry Mason, he seems, his character, as soon as he started talking, I thought of the new Perry Mason. It's not the courtroom drama of the 1950s, 60s. It's the Perry Mason who is more concerned with his client, the situation. Yes, he's going to solve what happened and everything, but he absolutely is more concerned over the health and well-being of the client. And I think that's not a way that most, like, say, mystery writers or detective writers jump into their story. So I think you have a really good buy-in for people like that. I like that.
Yeah. I haven't heard about a new Perry Mason. Because I like Perry Mason. I'll have to check that out. I do
yeah,
know that there's
a,
that new...
Go ahead.
Please say what you're going to say.
There was a new Perry Mason. It started before COVID, and COVID kind of crushed it down. I never thought they'd do a second season. So there's a season one, and season two starts in the middle of March. Around your birthday, maybe before. And so, happy birthday.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Great. Yeah, I know
you,
that,
you
know.
You mentioned you have, or you watch HBO Max. So, yeah, it's on, it's a HBO Max exclusive.
Yeah, I think of all the streaming services, HBO Max is the best one for a movie lover.
Yeah.
I think that they have the best,
yeah.
like, library.
Yeah.
I did watch that new Rian Johnson Poker Face show with Natasha Lyonne, and I can't lie, I was a little, like, you know, like, I was like, oh no, like, because it's very in tune with the tone and the character of Natasha Hall. And in fact, Natasha Hall's name was a combination of Natasha Lyonne and Rebecca Hall. It was like, that's where we got it from. So that new, I was a little, I don't watch a lot of TV either. So when I first heard about that new show, I was like, oh no. And then it took me like a month to work up the courage to actually like watch it. And I can't lie, it's pretty damn close.
Like, you know what? I can't see anything other than that helping you, because you have a movie and that's a TV show. And people that like the TV show will be scrolling like I do, scrolling through wanting to watch a movie and go, oh, I like that other show. This is like that other show. Bam. You're going to get a watch.
I hope so. We were developing this for a while as a TV show with a up and coming company. And then it kind of fell apart. The network fell apart. And that was one of the reasons why we wanted to make this movie. Cause with the first Natasha Hall, I really like the movie. I think it's arguably my best movie, but it didn't quite like paint the picture I wanted to paint for the character. You know what I mean? It wasn't like the kinds of stories I would want to tell with that character. And so we developed this show to be more in tune with what I had originally pictured. And when that fell through, I kind of became obsessed with the idea of like, well, now that I have this fully formed vision of what Natasha Hall, you know, what I wanted it to be, like, I can't not do that. So that's why we set out to make a second one kind of quickly, to kind of scratch that itch and to show people what we're really, you know, like, where we're really coming from with this character. So
that's great. Great.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a little weird. Like the first one, like I said, is set in 1990, and this one is not. This one's set in modern day because I was like, why not? The first one being set in 1990 was the story needed it to be 1990, and you know, when we were developing the show, you know, it was like, does the show need to be in 1990? You know what I mean? And being kind of a smaller independent film, you know, I felt like we could kind of get away with playing around with that a little bit. You know what I mean? I felt like we could be cut a little slack there. Hopefully it's so funny because this one's set in modern day, but when I was first showing the rough cut of like the trailer and some clips to friends of mine, they were like, is this one set in the 60s? And I was like, that's really funny. Like, yeah. I wish.
Okay. Well, who knows? You may get your wish. So I want to just pass it over to Vic a little bit, and tell us a little bit about your film and some of the things you've had to deal with. One thing I think is the library story, which I think is very funny and very
awesome. I don't think library story is funny at all. The golf balls being shot at us, that's funny, but the library story, if you lived it, you wouldn't think it was funny at all. In fact, I'm still really, Dylan and I, my son, who actually wrote the entire screenplay, we collaborated on the subject, on the characters. I named all the characters, made the character profiles, all of that stuff. Then we collaborated for about a little over a year putting this all together. He wrote the screenplay. I read it after he wrote it. We collaborated again to fine-tune it. And so the screenplay is called, or the movie is called Lake. And it is a psychological kind of thriller, kind of sci-fi horror thing. Not a lot of horror, and just one-third of it is into the realm of sci-fi. Most of it's a psychological thriller, like what the heck is going on. And so to realize this was, at first, we were just trying to do a short. A friend of mine who's very well known here in the Fresno community, her stepdaughter did a short film and entered it at a famous film festival that I can't think of right now, and they won. And this was her stepdaughter's first try at all this. And so we Carl and I share a friend, Joe Lemieux, who also encouraged me to, like, just do it, just do it, just do it. And if you say that to me enough times, I just go do things. And so that's how Lake became, because we had this idea, and at first it was going to be a short film, and then it grew into a feature-length film. And, man, okay, so the library story. There's this follows a character. The main character is a graduate student in astrophysics whose mentor, his professor, passes away, and he leaves a legacy for him. And this legacy, he had no idea what his mentor was sort of into, what looks like the metaphysical. And so as he gets deeper and deeper into this, it's like during winter break, so there are no students around the university at the time, but his friend, who's kind of like maybe his girlfriend, works in the library. And so as they, when we first see them, they're kind of flirting with each other and everything, but as this metaphysical thing starts unfolding around him, he becomes more and more distant with everything, including his friend, maybe girlfriend, Valerie. And this was all supposed to be done in a library, and I thought, oh my God, how hard is that going to be, find a library? So I have the City College that I went to long, long ago in dinosaur age, have this, it's this beautiful archaic part of the library where everything is wood. The tables are still thick, heavy wood. There's paintings on the ceiling. The windows are 20 feet up, and the light comes in and gives you this kind of gothic feeling. And it would have been perfect. And it was during COVID. Everything was shut down. So I went to the administration. I emailed them. I texted them. I talked to everyone except the person who could give us the okay, because she refused. I left so many messages on her machine, on her cell phone and her machine at work. So many, or whatever they do at City College, because they're very backwards there. And anyway, I never got anything back from her. And it's just like, oh, my God, what's going on? So shooting is coming up, and we were going to try to do it stealth, you know, but you know, you can get in trouble with that. So we didn't, on campus, we did plenty of other things stealth, but because of insurance and because of everything, we didn't try it that way. So anyway, one of our actresses, she has family members who work in another library in a different, like south of us in a different county. I think they're still the same county, just a different city. And so she asked her relatives, and her relatives are hemming and like, oh, I don't know if you can do this or not. And so they just kept putting us off. When we tried to do it at the university, Fresno State University here in town, we did it on a Sunday, a late Saturday and a Sunday, and the young man that was in charge, who was just, you know, a student, he's like, I don't know if I'm supposed to let you do this. You guys go downstairs and do it down there. And it was all very hush-hush, and he was really nervous about it. And that didn't work out at all. The footage we got from that day and a half was just terrible. We had to get rid of it. And so it's like, how come we can't find a library? And so I was watching I can't think of the name of it now. You know, when you're watching the actors and directors and producers or whoever of a TV show, and they're doing commentary. Well, the commentary episodes on the librarians, of all things, the librarians. And I was listening to Noah Wiley and Jonathan Frakes were talking, and about why they had to build their own library, and why they, when they went to small towns and they had to build their own libraries in these buildings, there's a copyright thing in libraries. And if you're not careful and you film the wrong books on the shelf, everybody can be sued, everyone. And so libraries don't like you to film in their libraries. But if somebody would have just told me that 3 years ago, 4 years ago, would have made my life easier. And so that's a long story to the library thing. We never got to, we had to do it. CGI, and that's going to, you know, that affects the film. But really, we had no choice. And blah, they see that.
Ain't that the way.
Yeah. And then, you know, COVID filmed because we hired, well, not hired because everyone worked for free. Through the Fresno Film Alliance, we put out a casting call and told them, I have no money and we are doing this film. You want to come and talk to us and we'll talk to you or we'll let you read the script. If you like the script, there you go. You can be in the film. And we were lucky to get some really good people. I mean, really stellar performances out of some really great actors. And so we had three of them before, right, the 2 weeks before everything shut down for COVID, they said yes. And so after things started coming out of COVID and we could start shooting again, two of those three people said, oh, yeah, can't wait. Let's do it. And so then we had to get another lead actor, and, oh, I just cannot tell you how much I love this guy. He's the main character. He turned out to be – he's so enthusiastic about the part, and he became just this light, and he's so funny, and we laugh all the time. We had our very last filming at the park the other day, and he's just a pleasure. And so good things, bad things when it came to COVID, but COVID shut us down for about a year and a half, which is really bad.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's because we were doing it right at the exact beginning. No vaccine. Nobody knew. Everyone thought everyone was going to die. The end of the world was happening. So, I mean, we were, all of us were shut down in our houses for what, 4 to 6 months? So, yeah, it was a long haul. But almost everyone came back, and that was really great.
That's incredible.
So, yeah. So, Joe, just give us a story about something that happened with suffrage that, you know, just wanted to make your hair turn out, you know, pull out, that sort of thing. Was there anything that was really, like, frustrating in terms of shooting?
It'd take longer to describe that than watching the movie. Yeah, I mean, this was by far the hardest. Shoot, this is my 15th feature, and this is by far the hardest shoot I've ever had. Between locations dropping out, equipment malfunctions. I mean, on the day when we were shooting with Eric Roberts, for example, halfway through shooting his scene, and it's like a 10-page scene, halfway through shooting that scene, our camera was just like, I think I'm done. I think I'm done.
Yeah.
I think I'm done for the day.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, are you? You know, and thankfully we had like a backup camera, but it's like a completely different camera. So we had to like calibrate it properly to match, because we shot this on a kind of a novelty camera. We shot it on a digital Bolex, which is a camera that was crowdfunded like 12 or 13 years ago on Kickstarter to be created. And they actually stopped making them, like 5 or 6 years ago. So you can't even get them anymore. But it has a very like, it takes in light, texture and color the same way that like a Bolex would. And so when that breaks down on you, there's not another Bolex, you know what I mean? And so we had to calibrate, you know, a much fancier camera, and, We also, of course, that's a day where we're shooting a scene on a roof, on a rooftop garden. So like we're fighting the sun at that point, you know, and basically by the end of it, we got Eric's footage done, and then we had to, but we only had that roof for that day. And okay. I hate when I have to do this, but I have to backtrack a little. We had two actors who literally the day, or like 2 days before they were supposed to shoot, they called and backed out for various reasons. And one of them claimed she had COVID. I have, I know her well enough to be like, did you? But we had to replace that actor. And so the solution we came up with was to use my wife's sister, my sister-in-law, who, you know, is an actress as well, but she lives in Denver. So we had to, and she's a teacher, but thankfully she was off that week because that was the beginning of her winter break. So we called her, we said, hey, can you literally fly out to LA tomorrow for a week and we'll reschedule this character where we can film all of her scenes like in 4 days. And she did, she jumped on a plane. And of course she's in that scene with Eric Roberts. And of course she has to fly back the next day back home. So like we had to get her coverage. And so we actually had to coordinate it where we shot the roof looking like it was daytime when it was pitch blackout. And of course it was like freezing by that point because it's, you know, it's winter in a desert, you know, and so like you could see like their cold breath, and all of a sudden we had to, you know, get rid of that. But thankfully, like the house we were shooting in, the guy who owns the house is actually Rocky Morton, who is the director of the DOA remake with Dennis Quaid, and he directed Super Mario Brothers. He and his ex-wife Annabelle, they directed the Super Mario Brothers with Bob Hoskins. He has like a rooftop garden, you know, and so they were so accommodating. They let us stay there way later than we expected, than we had, you know, estimated with them without complaint. And then when we got downstairs after shooting, they had bought like this incredible, like Thai dinner, like spread for the whole crew, like as like a gift to us for like our hard day, you know. It was just so incredible. Like the shit we had to go through, but like what we ended up, like how we ended up pulling it off. Like, it's funny. The first couple times I showed rough cuts of what we had to some people, they were like, wow, it looks like you guys had a lot of fun making this movie. And I wanted to like leap across the room and start like choking them. Be like, I'll show you fun. This was, you know, like, cause it really was, you know, and I always say to people, it's not fun making a movie. It's fun having made a movie. Like that's kind of my philosophy on it. But this one, I don't even know if that I can say that. I can say that I think the movie we made is a lot of, you know, I'll tell you, this is kind of cool. I had the last Natasha Hall was produced by these Norwegian filmmakers, Per Ingvar Tamren and, Raymond Valle. I think I'm saying their names right. Sorry guys. And this time they wanted to they produced it from Norway last time, but they wanted to come out and be a part of this one, this production. So Raymond came out and he was like a grip in an AC, and then Pitt, he ended up doing like special effects and things like that. So they were out here helping us, and they were here for 3 months, and they had to fly home out of Miami. So the last week of us shooting Natasha Hall Suffrage was in New Mexico. We went to New Mexico to film the Rebecca, our movie star's character is Rebecca Leone, and she lives in like a compound, and we filmed that compound in New Mexico. After we got done wrapping in New Mexico, I hopped in a van with my brother and with the Norwegians and with my buddy Andy, who came out, who also lives in Florida. I'm from Florida, so I got, you know. He came out from Florida to help do sound. We all hopped in a van with all of the Norwegians' luggage. We drove across the country to Florida. We shot some stuff in Florida, and then we drove the Norwegians down to Miami to fly home. On our road trip, we stopped in Texas because the Norwegians, they're big horror movie fans. And they wanted to go to the gas station where they filmed the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And so we stopped at that gas station, which is now a barbecue restaurant, and it was closed, right? But we were still taking pictures out front, you know, having a good time. As we're taking pictures, the woman who owns the place pulled up in her car, and she was there to get a loaf of bread from the kitchen to bring home so she could make lunch for her kids, right? And we were telling her, like, oh, man, it sucks that you guys are closed today. You know, like, this is their only chance, you know, being from Norway to see the place. And she was like, well, you know, we have cabins out back. And she was like, we could rent these cabins to you for the night if you want to stay. And then, you know, tomorrow morning when we're open, you could be, you know, blah, blah, blah. So she hooked us up with, like, a really cool deal, and we got to stay in these really incredible cabins out behind the Texas Chainsaw gas station. And
wow.
They set us up with, like, firewood. They set us up. They gave us a flamethrower. And there was nobody staying there except for her dad was staying in one of the cabins, and I believe he was like Croatian, and he was just this cool, surly old dude who's, you know, he came out and was drinking with us and, like, you know, shooting off the flamethrower, and one of the Norwegians, he's in a wheelchair, and believe it or not, the whole place is wheelchair accessible. Like wheelchair,
wow.
Like wheelchair ramps across the field, wheelchair accessible cabin, wheelchair accessible bathrooms and shower. And like, it was incredible. And we set up, and we ended up, they had like a video library there that you could like borrow. They had all the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies. And we have a buddy who's actually in Natasha Hall and in Suffrage, Dwayne Whitaker. He's in the third one, Leatherface. He's in that one. So in honor of him, we set that up and watched that around the campfire that night, you know. And that was one of, if not my absolute favorite experience of making the movie, was staying at those Texas Chainsaw cabins.
Part of this, Joe, is in terms of it's so much work, but then the serendipity comes in, and you have experiences you'll never have again in your life.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
That's the beauty of doing
yeah.
the film.
That was,
you know,
it was so serendipitous that night that we were sure we were going to get murdered. We were like, we're being set up for the kill. Like, you know, this really, she just so happens to show up over here and offers an amazing discount on the rooms and all these accommodations. And like, yeah, we're getting murdered tonight. When we woke up the next morning, we were pleasantly surprised.
Well,
so.
You know, you also mentioned Leatherface, and I've had the pleasure of talking to Jeff Burr about that, who directed.
Wow.
So yeah. You know, I mean, there's all these things, you know, and doing the podcast, the people that I talk to, like yourself, and that sort of thing. It's a great experience to hear these things, and it's just wonderful. So I think my next question is, what's next for you, Joe? What do you have in mind that you want to do?
Sleep. It's funny. I have another Natasha Hall movie I want to make. Next year will mark 20 years since I created my production company, Blue Means Pregnant Films. And in 20 years, we've made 15 features. And they've all been DIY, is the best way to put it. My biggest budget that I've ever had for a movie is $62,000. We've made some of our features for as little as $500. You know, the last Natasha Hall, we made that one for about $19,000. And we lucked out. I was very fortunate to meet this cinematographer named Josh Chiara, who he's kind of like me in that, like, he's not a ladder climber. He wants to be a cinematographer, so he owns all of his own equipment. He's like self-taught. He's like a one-man army. He's like Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins with the whole one-man band thing, you know what I mean? But he elevated that production to, like, I mean, that movie looks incredible, you know, like, but we all were doing it during lockdown, so we didn't have to worry about, like, you know, our jobs or our, you know, so that had this, like, kind of professional, quote unquote, quality to it that we're not always blessed with, if you will. And I just want the opportunity now, for the first time in 20 years of doing this, to have a professional production. Like, I want to do, like, a higher budget production, you know, not anything crazy. I'm talking, like, you know, a nice, like, $250,000 production to, like, really get the opportunity to bring something to life. Yeah, well, to fully realize something, because, like, you know.
Yeah, okay, you know, put it that way, yeah.
And I especially want to do that with this character that my wife and I have created, because I think it's a really great character. And this one, we did things, as people like to joke, we did it my way this time, which is, like, no matter what, we're getting it done, you know? So it's very run and gun, very by the seat of your pants, very, you know, and thankfully I got some incredible actors and actresses to hop on board with this movie. I mean, not even just Eric Roberts, but, like, Elise Muller, who's in, like, Baghead. Like I said, we got Dwayne Whitaker, who was actually, you know, he's in Leatherface. He's also in another Jeff Kerr movie. He's in Eddie Presley.
Great film.
You know, we got Ron.
Great film.
Yeah, he is Eddie Presley. So he's in this.
Oh, good God.
Yeah. Yeah. We got Ron Thompson, who I've been working with now for almost 10 years. He's back in it. Daniel Roebuck is in this movie. He plays the presidential candidate that everybody either loves or hates. We were very blessed. And but next time, I want the opportunity to really direct. I want the opportunity to where I don't have to be a producer. I hate producing. It's my least favorite thing on the planet. I'm terrible at it too. Like, I really am really bad at it. I just want the opportunity to, like, get to work with my actors, get to take our time shooting, get to where we don't have to have the pressure of, like, we got to get this done because we got to go to work on Monday. You know what I mean? That's what I want next. And so I have an idea for a third Natasha Hall. It's called Dumb Lucky. And it's kind of like a, I guess the best way it would be to describe it is it's a country Western version of the Blues Brothers meets Midnight Run. Would be
okay.
the best way to put it. So
that sounds interesting.
Yeah, and you know, and there's some actors who I really want to work with. Who I had a few actors in this because originally we were going to do this SAG, but when people dropped out of the financing last minute, I couldn't do it SAG anymore. So I had to work with, you know, FICOR non-union, and like Gould was going to be in this one and couldn't do it. And to work with him is a dream of mine, really. You know what I mean? So, you know, we're kind of tailoring the next one around being able to work with him, especially. So hopefully
happen. Please make that happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Seriously. You know, one of my favorite actors of all time.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, not to one-up you, but he is my favorite actor of all time, for sure. So getting to work with him, and I have a weird list of people that I want to work with. Like, I really want to work with Johnny Knoxville. I really want to work with Bruce Spence.
I love Bruce Spence. I hope you get Bruce Spence.
Oh, me too. He's one of those guys that ever since I saw Ace Ventura: When Nature Calls, I'm like, who's this guy?
I have to interrupt here and just say, where the green ants dream. That's all I have to say.
Where?
You've never seen that, Joe. See it. It's Bruce's only starring role, seriously, and it's a Werner Herzog film. Fantastic.
Okay. That combo sounds right, Werner Herzog and
yep.
That sounds right. Patrick Fischler. Like I said, I've got all these people that I really want to work with, but Gould is the priority and has been for a long time. So that's Dumb Lucky is the next thing I'd like to do here. And hopefully with the first Natasha Hall, we'll be getting the numbers back from how it's doing online and hopefully or on VOD rather. And hopefully once I get those numbers back, I can use those and the franchise that we're creating here to leverage getting like a really good budget to do the next film and to really bring it to life.
Well, listen, anything we can do to help, you know, when it goes streaming and that sort of thing, please let us know and come back and we will push the hell out of it, Joe. Seriously.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. That would be great. And like I said, we're hoping the plan with suffrage is to, and isn't it so funny? Like the big debate, like when I wrote the script, I called it Natasha Hall Suffrage, but then we started like debating, like, do we call it a Natasha Hall thing? Because, you know, I really liked, you know, I was thinking about like Raymond Chandler and Agatha Christie. And even now with Rian Johnson, with the stuff that they're doing. And it's like, you don't call it, you know, Benoit Blanc in Glass Onion or, you know, Philip Marlowe in The Long Goodbye. No, you know what I mean? Suffrage, that's what we're calling it, not Natasha Hall Suffrage. But I'm still trying to brand it as the Natasha Hall thing. And hopefully we're going to send Suffrage now on a film festival thing for the next 6 months or so. And then we'll hopefully release it alongside the first one as like a pairing. And I'm hoping that it kind of slingshot each other into success. So that's the plan. As long as I can finish Suffrage on time, I'm still trying to hunt down the finishing funds for Suffrage, but you
well,
know,
do,
true
do
to form,
you have to do.
We'll make it happen.
Do it. No, absolutely. So at this point, I wanted to thank you for coming on, Joe. I'm going to pass it over to Vicki, and Vicki, just tell us a little bit more about Lake and your websites and so on and so forth where people can get in touch with you.
No, I shut down the website. We're going to use a different web provider, so I'm not going to have that for a couple more weeks.
Okay.
So I'm keeping all the same content, and so but for right now that is yeah they the what we're we were using raised their prices. I mean, inflation is one thing, but sticking it to you in the back is just the worst. So I said, forget it. You're not going to get any more of my money. So, because you already have enough of my money. And so right now you cannot get in touch with us through the website. The only thing you can do is go to Cosmic Films, Cosmic 5 Films on Facebook, or just find me on Facebook, Vicki Love. And so we're in post-production. Other than a weekend of voiceovers that we are doing next weekend, I think. In fact, I'm pretty sure it is next weekend. Other than that, we are done with the filming. We have half of the last third of the film. The editing still has to be done. And the because we just finished that part, and we haven't had the music. Our music has to be put into it, so that still has to be done. But we're still projecting that it will be completed by May and have a premiere in the early part of June, and so that should be. That should be interesting. I was looking at festivals to enter it into. And so those things are all happening. I'm a first-time person doing this, so I'm pretty overwhelmed, and yet I'm really enthusiastic and can't wait. We have distributors who want to, you know, come in and distribute the film. We had an offer from Sony that I just kind of said, you know, I bought Sony all my life, and if you put all that together, I've paid more to your company than you want to pay for my film, so kind of kindly walk away. And so, you know, we have all that stuff happening. But I'm not in the promotion stage yet. I'm not really.
Okay.
As soon as we have a trailer, that'll come up.
When you have a trailer and everything, you let me know, and I'll do whatever I can for you, Beck. Okay.
Right.
So
are you premiering in Fresno?
What?
Are you going to premiere it in Fresno?
Yeah, I am.
I would love to come up for it. My wife and I would definitely come up for that.
So. Oh, awesome. I have a list right now. I've got two places in mind. Whichever one's going to be the best deal is the one that I'm going to go for, of course. But I used to work, when I was teaching, I used to work with this one company, and they have a hall that they rent out to people for films. And so I'm thinking,
cool.
They might just be it. So, yeah, I'll let you know. And I would love to have more people there than not, okay?
I have a secret suspicion I'll be making a trip out there, too, for that, Vic. Seriously.
Awesome. I've been premiering at the same theater now for the last, 5 years, the Regent in Westwood, Landmark in Westwood. And they actually, the last Natasha Hall screening we did, they told me, they called me a couple days later, and they're like, you know, we sold more alcohol at your premiere than we have in the entire time since we've been reopened after COVID. and I said, so the next time we get to rent for free? And they laughed, and they said, ha, 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 and hung up. You know, so that's our goal with this one, is to outdo that this time.
That's cool.
Outdo
that's
those
awesome.
Numbers.
That is really awesome. When are you going to have your premiere?
You March 22nd. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Duh.
On the birthday. Yep. It's always good to repeat it because even I forget. So.
Right. Right. I'm going to write that down.
It's going to be a hell of an event. We almost sold it out last time. The goal is to sell it out this time. Originally, before they got bought by the Landmark, they had 400 seats. Now they only have 188. I think we can do it.
Right.
I think those are realistic numbers.
Right. How awesome is that? Mm-hmm. Wow. I have a lot of things that I have to do in March, but I might buy a ticket and come and see it.
That'd be great.
That's why I just wrote it down. Okay, and so awesome. It's not out of the realm of possibility because I was just in LA in Hollywood in November, right before Thanksgiving, and I just drove through LA last week to get to San Diego. So it's not like I don't know where it's at.
Perfect.
All right. Awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll let everyone know about ours.
Okay, so Joe, just tell us about moving, take pregnant films and where we can see your stuff and so on and so forth.
Right, we have a website, bluemeanspregnantfilms.com, and on that website you can see most of our features. There's a couple you can't watch because they're, some rights tied up in rights, like Natasha Hall and Hate Horses, but most of our filmography is on there to watch for free. We also have a bunch of short films. We have some making of documentaries that are like feature length on some of the productions you can watch. There's also like contacts and links to all of the people I collaborate with, from actors to writers, composers. Everything is there. You can purchase Blu-rays and DVDs from the website. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to share what we've done over the last 20 years here. And, bluemeanspregnantfilms.com.
Awesome.
All right. Well, listen, it was great to have you, Joe, and Vicki, and talking about all this. And just remember, for all the hair that you lose by pulling out your hair during filming, there's so many great things that happen once it's all done. and you have an experience that you've never had before. I envy you both. So for
I just want to
focus
say,
somebody
I don't,
who's never done it. No,
right. You know, here's the thing.
It.
I love it. Yeah, I do. I love it. I love it too. I want to do it again. I don't want to use all my own money again. And you know, I that's a very hard deal right there. I took everything out of my own paycheck, out of my own savings account to make this film, out of my own credit, you know, all of that. And I love it so much, but I really want to be able to pay my actors. I don't, it's got nothing to do with hubris or anything. What I want is I want to produce something that people that we're not seeing anymore is really good films. We're not seeing entertainment anymore. I don't know what we're seeing these days. But anyway, we want to see entertainment. So I want to try to add to that, and I would love to pay my people. So I'm hoping that this gets a foot in the door. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. I'm not asking for $1 million. I'm not even asking for a half, okay?
I hear you.
There you go.
And Carl, I also want to tell you, I don't know if you heard about that, the Neil Jordan, Philip Marlowe movie that just came out with Liam Neeson.
No, I haven't. And trust me, I got to go see it. There's no doubt about it.
It's very good, actually. I caught it last week. I'm going to go see it again today. I'm going to take Ron Thompson to go see it today. It's a very good film. And I think it's actually in the vein of what you're just saying. It's a very entertaining movie. When I saw it last week, I was like, thanks. I appreciate that. I put on my shoes for this, and I'm glad I did. Like that, and that's all the movie was. So I highly
that's
recommend.
Good.
I'm
tired of messages. I want it to be thoughtful. I want to be either entertained. I want to be laughing. I want my heart pounding, or I want to think about something after I leave. I don't want messages thrown at me. I have enough of that crap. Okay, I just want some entertainment.
Oh, check out Marlo. I recommend it.
And look up Perry Mason on HBO. It's different than the old Perry Mason. I'm telling you that, but I think you might like it.
I'm very excited about that. Actually, I appreciate the recommendation.
There you go.
All right. So again, thanks so much for being on with us. Really appreciate it, guys. You're welcome back anytime. Joe, you got to let us know when, like after the premiere, come back and tell us how it went, okay?
Sounds great. Thank you for having me again.
Absolutely. And you're welcome back anytime. And, of course, that goes for you too, Vicki, but you already know that. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening, guys. And I think we're going to say good afternoon, good night, good morning, whatever time it is you're listening to this. So thanks a lot.
Catch
guys.
You later.
Really appreciate it. Joe Black and Vicki Love, our guests. And
good night,
let's
everyone.
Say good night. Good night.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
There we go.